His Honor, City of Racine Mayor Corey Mason is here. Thank you for coming in, Mayor. I do appreciate it.
My pleasure. I'm glad to be here.
It's a nice day.
It is.
You don't have to schlep through the snow, the rain, the sleet.
Yeah. Upper 60s, nice cool breeze coming in. Sunny day. It's great.
Last night we got scared. There were tornado warnings in Milwaukee.
We got some thunderstorms and lightning. I had to pick up my son from soccer practice at Case. They got stuck right at the end of their practice there in the rainstorm. But yeah, it was quite a light show, but nice this morning.
That reminds me of Two and a Half Men when Alan forgot to pick up his son after soccer practice and he's in the rain soaking wet with his soccer ball.
Yep.
And he says, I forgot. I'm sorry. He says, how many kids do you have that you forgot about me?
Yeah, all the kids were huddled in the field house waiting for parents to come get them in the rain. But yeah, it was good.
And now all the dogs around here were hiding in the corner in the closets. Yeah. They just can't take that.
That thunder and lightning.
All right, I have a list of things here, plus we have a listener question, and if you have a question for the mayor, you can text us, download the Civic Media app, and what you do is just look for WRJN, click on it, and text us the question. We got it, and we'll ask it to the mayor. You're not afraid of anything, are you? No questions?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Let's talk about Bishop Kirby. What's that about?
Well, Bishop Kirby passed away this week, and so for, I think, a lot of people in this community, he was a profound, not just spiritual leader for St. Paul's Missionary Baptist Church, but also just for the broader community. And his passing was, I think, just a loss that we're going to feel for a long time. So first and foremost, I want to offer my love and sympathy to his family and his wife, Renee, and his son, Pastor Kirby, and his daughter, Charisse, and all their family members. But also, obviously, the St. Paul's community has got to be reeling from this. I mean, again, he's been their pastor for decades. And then just in the broader community, I mean, literally the day before he died, he was texting me trying to help a local nonprofit get started and try to help somebody with a home repair grant and, you know, a couple other things going on in the community. He was always, always focused on the broader community. And, you know, there were times, I mean, I remember 5 years ago when gun violence had really spiked, we had this sort of community meeting at the King Center and, you know, we had a lot of pastors there and it was almost as though, you know, there were a lot of prayers given, but, you know, Bishop Kirby's ability to preach and give a prayer that was meaningful and connected with people in the moment and really, you know, give people sort of that pastoral sense of healing and calm that prayer can often bring. I mean, he wasn't just a religious leader in the community. He was a profound community leader and, you know, made a national impact in his faith and in his church. But here locally, he'll be missed for a long, long time. So I wanted to start this morning by just offering condolences to his family and the whole community. But just for me personally, he was just always, he was the guy who called, he's like, anyway, we can just grab lunch real quick today. And occasionally it'd work out and he'd ask about things going on. He was always, always advocating for the community. And he will be seriously and severely missed.
You know, in It's a Wonderful Life, they say to George Bailey, each person doesn't know how many lives they touch.
Yeah.
And you touch a lot of lives without even knowing it.
Yeah.
And obviously, Bishop Kirby, touched a lot of lives.
Yeah. Yeah. And in beautiful and positive ways. And so really kind of a giant amongst men in our community has gone home to the Lord this week. And so, again, we will feel that loss, but we will get to celebrate his good works throughout his life at the service next week.
Speaking about churches, that steeple downtown.
Oh, my goodness. It looks beautiful.
Now I have to stop at that stoplight every time because the stoplights have changed, and I just stare at it. It's just, it's mesmerizing what those workers, how they cleaned it up, fixed it, and it's just, it glitters in the sun.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
They did a nice job on that, and that scaffolding to get
it. Oh, my goodness.
That poor guy, those poor people had to climb up that ladder.
Yeah.
That's like I would have had to start on the Monday, and maybe by Friday I would have finished climbing the ladder.
Yeah, it was intense, but it looks beautiful.
Pritchard Park and the Lincoln King Housing.
Yeah, so we've had some housing come online. You know, we have a housing shortage that's in Racine. I mean, it's nationwide, right? But in Racine in particular. And so, you know, we've got these market studies that say that we could take on another 300 units of housing every year in terms just to meet what the market demand is.
Drink of water.
And so, yes, thank you. And so, you know, we've had some real success with these townhomes that we're finishing up in the King neighborhood that'll be sold at a substantially reduced rate. We're going to sell them for less than half of what it cost to build them. And then over by the old Regency Mall, just across from Pritchard Park, on Roosevelt, where the old Marcus Theater used to be. There's going to be 266 new apartments that are there. And those will be market rate apartments, but those are just over by the kind of by the Target there, off of Roosevelt, off of Grand Avenue there. And they're orienting them towards Pritchard Park just across the street, and excited to be there. And so the first two buildings are being leased up now. They cut the ribbon on those last week as well. So, you know, in an area where we hear people saying, look, we need more housing, we need housing at different pricing points. You know, we're doing some market rate apartments there, and then some homes that people will be able to purchase for a reduced rate over in the Lincoln King neighborhood, where the new King Community Center is being built over on Wilson there. So we're really excited about the progress that we're making there. People are talking a lot about we need access to affordable housing, but we're actually getting some of it done. And it's, you know, it's 35 units. It's not 300 units, but it's real progress, and we're excited to bring those online.
Have you traveled on Spring Street by my church, Racine Bible Church?
Yeah.
All those farmland was sold out, and they put up these huge apartment complexes, huge on both sides of the street. There's got to be a couple of hundred there.
Yeah.
You're telling me they can rent out a couple of hundred? Now, I heard the price of it. I'm not going to say it because I heard it secondhand. It's not cheap.
Right.
I mean, they're going to rent all those units?
I mean, I think in the Racine County area, the need is for 1,000 to 1,100 new units a year.
Whoa.
A year, just to keep up with the market. And so, you know, I think you're going to see, the challenge is affordability, right? You know, a new house out in the suburbs is almost $500,000. And I don't know who can afford a $500,000 home. So in Racine, we're trying to find price points that are a little bit more affordable for average working class people as best we can. So, it's always a challenge there to be able to figure out how best to make that all work. But I think there's really a housing need. And, you know, the challenge is if we don't build communities, they'll go elsewhere, right? They'll build in Oak Creek, or they'll build in Kenosha, and, you know, it would be a real missed opportunity for the city of Racine and the broader Racine community throughout Racine County not to take advantage of the housing market that's emerging. Again, we're all struggling with affordability and the cost of housing going up, and the tariffs and the way that impacts lumber prices and all those things that make it more difficult, but people still need a place to be housed. And then, you know, a lot of the houses that we replaced in the Lincoln King neighborhood, these were houses, a lot of them abandoned or boarded up, some of them built in the 1860s and 1870s, and they just gone past their lives. And so we're excited to be able to replace those housing opportunities in those neighborhoods, you know, moving people who were in unsafe living conditions to newer, safer ones, and then to build new homes for additional people to move in.
My father bought our house when I was growing up. We moved from the Bronx out to Massapequa on Long Island in 1955. He bought a house for $14,500. Yep. Didn't even have the $10 down payment. He had to go borrow it from his brother. And he got the house for $14,500. In 2000, they sold the house for $225,000.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to show you a picture of the house. It looks pretty modest. It's not nothing big. Now I'll show you what the price is going for right now. Now, keep in mind, he paid $14,500, and the house was sold in 2000 for $225,000. Look at the price now.
$744,000. Yeah, I believe it.
Whoa.
I believe it. Yeah. Yeah.
I find that hard to believe. That's the going rate?
Yeah. Yeah.
They just sold it recently for $500,000. So that's the new price.
Right.
Whoa.
Well, and this is a piece that people sometimes miss about.
They should have left me the house in the will or something.
They should have. They should have. But actually, you point that out. So the one way that generational wealth gets passed from one generation to the next is through housing. It is parents leaving their kids, the next generation, selling the house, and then the proceeds go to the heirs, right? It is really the number one way that people build wealth, generational wealth in this country. And so to your point there, if somebody bought that house a quarter century ago and it's appreciated in value in $500,000 and they've managed to pay it off in that time, that's, you know, $700,000 in an inheritance that the next generation would get. Part of the reason we look at home ownership, and candidly, when we were labeled, you know, one of the less hospitable places in America for African Americans to live, part of that was because our home ownership rates are so low in this community, right? Particularly for minority communities. And so, you know, it was one of the things that we really wanted to work on, in part because the reason home ownership is important isn't just because it lets people build equity for themselves and stabilize a neighborhood, but it is because it is the number one way. You're trying to break that cycle of intergenerational poverty. If you've got a home that appreciates in value like that, then the wealth you pass on to the next generation is real. If you've got a home that's in disrepair, or you don't even own the home, or it's in a neighborhood with a lot of blight and challenges to it, then you don't see those benefits go to the next generation. So that story that you told there about just your family is really indicative of the number one way that wealth is passed from one generation to the next. And it's why we care about our neighborhoods generally, because we want them to be nice and fixed up and people to have safe and living conditions. But a thing that people don't often think about is, well, how does me having a nice house that I can sell and send the proceeds to the next generation or pass on to the next generation, how does that build generational wealth? And it is the most profound thing that you can do to stabilize a middle-class inheritance from one generation to the next.
We're talking to His Honor, City of Racine Mayor Corey Mason is here. Want to take some listener questions?
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
Okay, here we go. Let's talk about this question. Are you going to rotate TID districts? Doesn't seem fair that I get $10,000 a year for 27 years and the houses across the street get nothing, even though they pay the same tax rate. Houses on affluent Lake Avenue getting the benefit without regard for income bracket also doesn't seem fair. First of all, for people that don't know, why don't you tell what TID is?
Sure. So a TID is a tax increment district. And usually what will happen is, a developer will come along and say, hey, I want to build an apartment complex and put in a couple hundred units, and I would like a tax increment district. And the taxes that would go towards that project basically get put into building the project itself for up to 20 some years, right? And so that's how it works. What we've done in Racine that's a bit unique and I think pretty exciting is we've like, look, it's great that developers can come in and take advantage of that, but we have neighborhoods that could really use some help with housing and home repairs. And so one of the few communities in the entire state that has this home repair program. And so the people asked the question, was like, well, how did these boundaries get picked and couldn't they be bigger? And the truth is we've made them as big as we can possibly make them under state law. We'd love to do more of them. In fact, there's been a bill in the legislature to take the cap from 12% of net value of the city to 18%. And that would certainly allow us to do more in that space. And so we would love to be able to do that. But we've done over 1,100 home repair grants of $10,000 for people to be able to stay in their homes. And, you know, particularly if you're on a fixed income and you need to fix your porch or your roof, or, you know, there's some other need that you need to be able to do, it can really make a big difference for people. In terms of how the districts got formed and what their shape is, again, we've made them as big as we can under the state law. And the way it works is that enough of the neighborhood has to be considered blighted or in need of repair. But the geographic area we select also has to be increasing in value enough to create the money for the grants that come into play year over year. So it's been a very successful program. So successful, though, a lot of people are like, well, why can't I get it? I'm really close to that neighborhood. Couldn't I get it too? We'd love to expand the number of neighborhoods that are eligible for it. We would need a change in state law to be able to do it. So that's the thing behind it. But we were just talking about the need for home ownership and generational wealth and passing on a home from one generation to the next. What we find for a lot of folks, particularly as they become retired and they're on fixed income, you know, suddenly a new roof being repaired, that can be really, really expensive and really, really difficult for someone. So these grants are meant in place to help keep people in place, but to maintain the value of the housing in that neighborhood so that when they pass it on to the next generation, there's actually wealth there to send off, but also to, you know, fix up the houses that are in those neighborhoods to make our neighborhoods nicer and more livable and affordable for people in the area. So it's been a very successful program. And I know it's frustrating for people who are like, well, I love the sound of that program. I'd like to get in it too. We love it to be citywide, but the state does cap how much of it we can do and how the districts get shaped. So we'd love to do more. We're thrilled to have the success of it that we have. But if that's something that you think we should be able to do more of, I would encourage you to call your state legislator and tell them to lift the TID cap so that the city of Racine can do more home repair grants.
Next question. With the King housing that was sold for half of what it cost to build, but there'll be restrictions on how much the residents can sell them for in perpetuity.
Yeah. So they'll be restricted to homeowners. They will not be renters, right? We're really trying to improve the rate of home ownership here in the Racine community. And so we are excited to be able to do that, but it'll actually have a deed restriction on it that says it has to be, if it is sold, it has to go to a homeowner. But that equity, and we got this idea from Habitat for Humanity, you don't get the full equity of the value of that house until you've been there for 10 years. So you get half the equity after 5 years and then 10% more each year until you get to 10 years. So it's there to avoid people just flipping the house quickly and walking away with the equity, because we want people to build that equity, but we want them to be in that neighborhood for a long time and build a sense of community. Really good question. Really important protections to put in place to
make
sure.
Smart listeners here.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They're savvy questions.
Okay, let's talk about the youth employment program.
Yeah, this is the fourth year of us doing this. It's a great program. What we have found is, you know, a lot of people will say, hey, how do I get a city job? Like, what's going on? How do I get access to some of these city jobs that are out there? And what we found is, you know, we just need to do a better job of getting city residents an opportunity to intern in some of these departments. And so for 8 weeks over the summer, we have staff that that take on interns. And so we have about 40 or 50 of them every year who are in every department. So everything from learning how to do water testing as a scientist in the water utility, to learning how to work a public works crew, to working in the HR department, to doing research in the clerk's office. So it's been a real benefit to have them in place, and they love it. They give presentations at the end of the process to be able to do that. But what's been great then is when positions open up in these departments, oftentimes the directors are like, hey, what happened to that intern we had a couple summers ago? She seemed great. Why don't we see if they're available and see if they want to apply? And so as we've done it, we have found ourselves in a place where we have more and more city residents who are applying for city jobs. It's helped us create the police and fire cadet. So young people are going into public safety here. And it's just really great to see them all come together at it and get excited about public service. So we're really excited about it, and has led to more than a dozen people getting full-time positions in the city. We thought this might take 10 years to sort of come into fruition, because there's 16 to 24-year-olds that go through the program, but it's opened up a lot of opportunities for people. You know, we were just talking about housing and how important good housing is. The other thing that's important, you know, for people to have a middle-class life is a good-paying job, right, and having the skills to do those jobs. And, you know, believe it or not, the city is one of the biggest employers in the area. We have 900 employees. And so we find that if we make those positions available to people who are here, it really does help them move into that middle class life and hopefully be able to be a homeowner. But another place where we find that this is important is around CDL licenses. And so what's a CDL, you might say? It's a commercial driver's license. And so for all our employees who drive a city bus or drive a snowplow or drive a garbage truck or drive the bookmobile, right? Those are all positions that require a commercial driver's license. And so oftentimes we will have people who apply for some of these positions who are particularly city residents, but they don't have a commercial driver's license. So we got a grant from the Department of Workforce Development. Now we have our own in-house commercial driver's license training program. So we're taking some of our long-term part-time employees who work on some of those crews, and we say, hey, let's make sure you got a CDL license. So when those positions open up, you'll be ready to go and have the qualifications when you apply. So again, I mean, the theme this morning that we're kind of getting is, you know, you need good, decent, affordable housing for that middle class life. And you also need a good paying job. And so those are two of the things that we're really focusing on in our administration.
So when I got out of high school, my father said, you're going to get a job this summer. I said, well, maybe I'm going to lay around because I was starting college in the fall. He said, no, you're not going to get a job. I don't care if they pay you to pick your nose. You're going to get a job.
We don't have internships for that one.
So anyway, my mother worked for the county.
Yeah.
So she said, she pulled some strings, got me a job working garbage pickup. So I met with the guy at the yard, and he said, all right, you need steel toe shoes, because this is the old days when you had to pick up metal garbage pails. And I said, well, I was hoping to drive the truck. Drive the truck? You got to work for us 30 years before there's a line of people who drive the truck. So I bought the steel toed shoes, and I said, you know what? This sounds like a lot of work. Getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, picking up garbage pails all day. My back probably going out. I was 18 years old. So I had a job offer to be a janitor cleaning toilets at a radio station. I said, that sounds bad.
Yeah.
That sounds
bad. And now here you are.
From cleaning toilets, 55 years later?
Yeah.
So it was better. So, but it sounds like in the garden. Now they use it automatically.
Right. The lift.
But then you had to pick up all those garbage.
Yeah.
I see these guys picking up these cans and dumping them in the truck. I said, I can't do that. He said, yeah, it'll take a while, but you'll get used to it.
Yeah.
No, I won't get used to it. I'm a skinny little 18-year-old kid.
Lifts definitely make it easier, but it's still physically demanding work.
Of course
You know, there's bulky items they got to throw in there. And sometimes those carts can, you know, they're heavy. I mean,
some slobs throw their garbage all over in front of their house. They got to pick it up.
Yeah. So it's still physically taxing work. So, but to do that work, you got to get a CDL license or be a bus driver or whatever it is. So, we want to open those opportunities for local folks to, you know, when those jobs open, you got to have the credentials, right? And so we oftentimes will get people, oh, I'd love to do it. I just need, you know, 8 weeks to get the training. And it's like, well, we need to fill it now. So the idea is, hey, how do we identify people who want to do that? If people are interested in the CDL program, they can feel free to reach out to our human resources department and see if there's a spot they want to get into. If you're thinking, I'd like to get access to one of those jobs, how would I do that? We do have this program, and we've got 10 people in it now. And so we're hoping to take full advantage of the grant and get as many people trained up for it as we can.
Thanks for coming in, Mayor.
Always a pleasure.